I need to know everything. Who and the what and the where. I need everything.
Hello and welcome, JK Plus One. I am not your host, PTF. PTF's probably, what's he doing? I talked to him yesterday. What was he saying? He was saying that he was getting ready for Horse Player Happy Hour or something like that. I think he's got a few, when is that? Tomorrow? I think it's tomorrow. It's today. I don't know when you're listening to this. I am your host, Jonathan Kinchin, and it was a successful Belmont Stakes Racing Festival that I think most people will agree lived up to the hype. I mean, the betting was outstanding, the racing was outstanding, the weather was outstanding, the crowd, the vibe, everything about it. It was almost one of those things that was so good, it's like, dang, we can't have it here all the time. We got to go back downstate, but it was so good that it makes it a little bit tricky. The other thing I think it made me realize is obviously we have some weather concerns, but man, would a Breeders' Cup be cool at Saratoga. Don't know if we could handle it, know if the city could handle it, don't know all of those things, but I tell you what, it sure would be cool. Want to thank our friends at Qatar Racing, Sheikh Fahad and the team, always rooting for the claret and gold Qatar Racing has to offer. Look, we're going to jump right into this one. Not the longest episode, but you know, when you win a Belmont Stakes and you got a lot of other businesses you got going on, sometimes it can be a little tricky, but we did have time to catch up with our friend Jason Wirth. J-Dub, what's going on?
What's up, JK?
Well, I mean, I guess I got to call you a Belmont Stakes winning owner. Before now, like, you know, when you win an Oscar or a World Series, right? You're like World Series champion Jason Wirth, the Belmont Stakes winning Jason Wirth.
Yeah, credentials matter, right? it fits, I guess. It seems surreal to even think about. You know, a few days after now, it's starting to set in. But you know, maybe my feet have touched the ground here this morning. Back to reality, but it's been a crazy ride.
Now, I know that the question that you got immediately after is like, you know, how does this compare winning, you know, look, one of the world's biggest races. I think there's five, I think, that could probably stand out as like the world's biggest races, you know, the Derby, the Preakness, the Belmont, you know, a Breeders' Cup race. Compare that to winning a championship at the highest level of professional sports.
Yeah, I mean, that's the question everybody, you know, keeps asking. How, you know, where does it rank? So, I mean, I think with all the hoopla and everything surrounding the Derby, I think if he would have won the Derby, I would put that as number one. But you know, it's hard to discount winning a World Series and all the things that I did in Philadelphia and that team, and you know, winning's hard. at any level, so you can tell I still don't have a voice from Saturday. But I mean, look, it ranks up there. It ranks right up there with winning a World Series. I put you know, the parade as probably the coolest thing in Philly that we did after the World Series. Winning the World Series and then you know, winning the Belmont, man. It's at the top of the list for sure. There's something about horse racing too that's just so heart wrenching, and you know, maybe it's just the build up and then the you know, 2 minutes of just gut wrenching excitement that it makes it hard to compare to anything else. I mean, you know, I tell people, like, this is the best sport for retired athletes because it gives you that emotion that you used to have every day. And you did. It's so familiar, but then when you stop playing, there's no other way to access it. So you run in these races, even like a 8,000 claiming race at Tampa Bay on a Tuesday afternoon is exciting. You know, like it fills the void. But running these big races and these big events with all the stuff surrounding them at the tracks and you know the fashion and all the stuff that goes around it, you know, the parties and the people. I mean, it is an amazing sport. I think it's such an underrated sport. And, you know, I mean, I think the people that are in racing understand it and know it, but there's just so many people that you know, are just casual fans, or maybe they tune into the Derby, or they, you know, they'll watch their Triple Crown. or somebody attempt a triple crown, but they don't get into it. They don't immerse themselves into it. And it is just, it's a fascinating sport. The horses are amazing. And, you know, I think it's got a bad rap, and it's unnecessarily kind of been given that over the years. But I think if more people got into it, this could be the biggest, easily the biggest sport in the world overnight. You know, and it already is, you know, it already is big, and it already has been around for forever. But being kind of an amateur, a newbie, or whatever you want to call it, a rookie in the horse racing realm, it has just been so much fun and unexpectedly just amazing experiences over and over and over. So I'm a big fan.
So tell me, what was your journey? Like, were you popping over to parks on your days off when you were playing, or what, how did you find the racing?
So, no, I mean, I really never, I always would tune in for the Kentucky Derby and if, you know, anybody ever got on the Triple Crown trail, I would stay, to, you know, I would, you know, definitely watch. And that was about as far as my horse racing career went. I didn't pay much attention to it, but, you know, I would tune in for those races. You know, I definitely was into that, but it was, you know, when I got retired, I started playing golf with some guys. You know, Rich Averill, he's been doing horses for, I don't know, 25 years or something down in mostly Florida breds. And he's had good success down there. And, was playing golf with him, and I tell a story. It was like Tuesday afternoon, you know, 2 o'clock. We come in after playing golf, and these guys turn the you know, the races on, and I'm like sitting down, and I'm just kind of like out of it or whatever. You know, it's Florida, it's hot. You sit down, and you're like, you know, you need a cold drink, and you look up there, and I'm like, is this a rerun of a race from some, you know, some other time? You know, I'm thinking like, is there some significance to this race? Like, I had no idea that they, you know, they run horses every day across the world, like, you know, nonstop at every track. And then they just looked at me like, no, dude, this is right now, you know, I've got a horse running in the next race. And I'm like, yeah, you have a horse? Like, what do you mean you have a horse? He's like, nah, yeah, I own horses. Like, you know, I've got, you know, racing stable and this and that. And I'm like, I'm trying to figure out what he's even talking about. And then, you know, over the next 6 months or, you know, year or whatever, I'm finally catching on that this is a real thing. And then I'm like, well, how do I get into this? I want to own a horse. I want to, you know, this looks like fun. You guys are, you know, they're screaming, yelling at the TV. I'm instantly hooked. And, you know, that was kind of my entry into it. I just think it's, you know, the normal everyday person doesn't have any idea, you know, the magnitude of the sport, like how many races, how many horses. I mean, this goes on every day across the world, you know, and like, I think a lot of people have no clue how big this sport is.
How did you, so you started owning some horses with Rich, right? And then how did you find Dornick?
Yeah, so I got in on some horses with Rich, and we, you know, it was kind of, we claimed a couple horses, and we had some, I bought into some of his horses that he had bought already at either yearling sales or two-year-old sales. And a couple of my first horses I bought into, you know, our Adios Jersey and our Cali Kim, you know, all of Rich's. All of Rich's horses start with an R. So if you ever see the R, that's Rich Averill. So those were the two best by far. So we started having success, and then, you know, we went to the OBS sale and got some horses. We had what was the name of the one horse? We had some good names. Our Reposado Loca won a race. And then we have our Harper Rose together, who ran the Eight Bells. And anyway, so we went to the OBS sale. We got some horses. Then we went to Keeneland and to buy some yearlings. And at that point, you know, you start meeting other people in horse racing, and that's what horse racing is all about. I mean, it's about relationships. It's about the people you meet. It's about your partners. So we bought into some. I can't remember how many we bought, but like I walked into the bar at Keeneland one day, and Danny Gargan and his team were standing there, and so I looked over and I was like, I know those guys, I was like, I'll go over there. I mean, I could have went left to the other side of the bar. There's some people over there, and I was like, I'll go see what these guys are up to. So walked in, started talking to those guys, and they're like, you should get on this good magic we just bought. Nice horse, you know, be a Derby trail horse. I know, you know, you and Rich are buying fillies, and this will be you diversify. Danny said, you need to get in a little bit of everything. So, I was like, all right, yeah, sure, I'll get it. All right, let's go. So that was the first colt I bought, was Doran, and I think that sale I bought. I bought some horses with like the Legion Bloodstock guys who are great guys. And I think I bought, parts of, they've got like these racing groups that are kind of fun. I think I ended up buying like parts of five colts. Well, one's Dornick. And then I got this other horse named Drip. Drip's been working with Honor Marie earlier in the year. And it was outworking Honor Marie by like a length. Ran a big time in his first race, broke his maiden, and then was gonna be the favorite at the Tampa Bay Derby, and on like that Monday, he's with Whit Beckman, and on like that Monday, you know, Whit noticed he kind of had like a hot foot, and on Tuesday they scratched him. So out of the five colts I bought at the yearly sale, one was Dornick and the other one Drip. I had literally two shots at going to the Derby, and I still think Drip could have had a chance of being horse of the year. I mean, he was that good, and he's doing better. He's back. I think he's almost back ready to start training. He had like a stress fracture that they caught. Whit did a great job with him. So we still got him to look forward to here as we go on throughout the year.
And so when you got involved, with Dornick and then, you know, obviously his 2-year-old year, he had a great productive 2-year-old year. And then you had the pedigree where you were a foal to a Derby winner in Mage. Did you ever lose a little bit of faith? Cause I admittedly did lose a little bit of faith with Dornick through his 3-year-old year, right? Because, you know, you guys had the, I guess it was the Holy Bull where he wasn't, you know, no one else was in there. And so you never really knew how good that performance was. And then you had the Bluegrass thing where Danny has admitted that he shouldn't have rated the horse. Did you ever lose faith throughout the process?
You know, no. And let's talk about that for a minute, because I think the one thing that gets overlooked is his performance in the Remsen. I haven't been in horse racing very long, but that Remsen race is incredible. And if you saw the video from the Belmont with me screaming, get off the rail, you know, if you've seen the Remsen, you'd know why. He comes around the turn and bangs into the rail at the quarter pole, knocks him off stride. I mean, you can see it. It's going to take a trainer, or somebody that's been in horse racing long to see him hit the rail and knock him off stride. Well, then Sierra Leone, you know, literally passes him by a length. His ears perk up, and then he's like, you know, not today. And he runs back and, you know, shows a ton of game and catches Sierra Leone at the line. I mean, JK, you're in horse racing, and so is everybody else. Why was that race never talked about again?
Well, I mean, I think it was. I mean, I think after that race, Dornick and Sierra Leone were kind of like the early – yeah, I don't want to say front row because Fierceness had run so fast, but they were right in the mix as like Derby conversation types. Well, and then I think we were meant to learn a lot about Dornick when he came back in his 3-year-old debut in the Fountain of Youth. I said Holy Bull earlier. I meant Fountain of Youth. Yeah. But with, when that, remember Todd's horse scratched, and then, you know, Dornick basically had it his own way. We didn't really learn much about him in the Fountain of Youth. Nope. And I think the Bluegrass was the opportunity where I was thinking, okay, this is where he could show up and show that what he did last year in the Remsen, this is who he is. And he didn't run particularly well. And so I think that's why I think maybe a lot of people gave up to a certain extent.
He didn't run great in the Bluegrass. And Louis said he got tired. And if you watch that race, he's fighting Louis the whole way around the track. And, you know, he doesn't like to be behind horses. He likes to be out in the lead. I mean, I threw the Bluegrass out. And I just said, you know, just wasn't his day, and he didn't have a good trip. Danny said that, oh, we're going to raid him. But, I mean, he got buried on the rail right off, didn't get out of the gate. Sierra Leone took 10 minutes to get in the gate, and he didn't, you know, he was one of the first horses in. And he kind of started flat-footed, and he was buried on the rail. He had nowhere to go. So, I mean, I threw that race out. You know, then coming into the Derby, you know, even McPeak even said it, that, you know, they thought Dornick was going to be on the lead. And a lot of people were like, you know, looking for Dornick to come out of the gate and you know, be on the lead out of the one hole, which is, you know, as everybody knows, it's almost impossible to win out of the one hole. But, you know, he broke to the right. Mystic Dan, you know, kind of beat him to the rail and cut him off. I feel like if we would have beat, you know, Mystic Dan to the rail, we would have had the trip. And, you know, so, like, for me, I just kind of threw the Bluegrass out, and then if you watch the Derby back, you know, he ran up to like fifth, and then he got cut off, check, and then he's all the way back to 17th. You know, ran up to like sixth, check, then he's all the way back to like 16th. And at the end there, is him and Sierra Leone goes right, and we start to follow him, and there was a horse there, and he broke in left, and then he got smashed a couple times, and then, you know, Louis just kind of held him back. So I just thought it was more, you know, kind of bad luck, bad trip. You know, if you want to say Danny said he was going to raid him, I don't think it mattered. I think he got, you know, had a bad trip. He doesn't like being behind horses. So if you can get him on the lead, you know, I think he'd be in good shape. Coming into the Belmont, you know, everybody's like, well, where do you want to be? I was like, you know, if we can be like, you know, 6, 7, 8, I think we're going to have a good shot. Even if, you know, if he's down there lower, if he breaks good, but he just hasn't been breaking great. But, you know, I thought we were live in that race. I mean, I know there's good horses, but I mean, if you knew how I bet them, you would know that I never lost faith. But I just thought the Remsen race was, you know, so cool and so amazing, and he showed so much game, and in the Fountain of Youth. For me, I mean, anytime a horse ran up next to him, he just took off. So, and that's, if you talk to Louis, he says anytime a horse comes up near him, he takes off running. So I think when he's pressed, he's just not one of those horses that's just going to get out and take off, like, you know, and freak out. But, you know, I don't know what it takes to make a horse do that, but, you know, he kind of is what he is. And I call him Big Puppy when we go see him in the barn. I think Big Puppy's amazing.
What's next? What's going to be next for Big Puppy? What's the plan?
I don't know. I haven't, all the stuff that I've been talking to Danny and Scotty about is just, you know, how is he? You know, how's his health? How's he acting? And we went to see him in the barn the next day, and, you know, he's such a cool dude. I mean, he's got so much personality. He was doing great, and they all the reports are good. No issues, you know, he usually comes out of the races with, like, no hair out of place, you know, like, a couple times the jockeys have been like, you know, we can run him in the next race and win. His gallop out was amazing. His gallop out of the Derby was great. And I think he's a special horse. So we'll see. I know there's some talks right now about selling breeding rights and some stuff like that. So I think that's probably at the top of the list. And then we'll figure out if he's going to run, you know, Jim Dandy or Travers. He loves that track there at Saratoga. That's his home. So I think it would make sense to keep him there and run him in those big races as the summer goes on. But, you know, I mean, I think sky's the limit. After you win a race like that, you're kind of you're kind of set in stone who you are and the type of races you're going to be running in. So I don't think we're going backwards. That's for sure.
I would think that from a pedigree standpoint, some real probably productive stallion conversations, right? I mean, he's a foal to a Derby winner. He's by Good Magic, who's by Curlin. So it seems like there should be a lot of interest, I would think, for a horse like this winning, you know, won a graded stake at two around two turns. You know, the grade one winner in the Belmont Stakes going a mile and a quarter. Sounds like a hell of a stallion, Paige.
Yeah, you know, he looks the part too. He's probably, I know Sierra Leone is a big horse, but those two were by far the biggest horses, you know, visually and just presence wise, in the Derby and in the Belmont. So I mean, he definitely looks the part. He's got the kind of the bad attitude. He's a bad boy. We'll see what comes of it. I'm not in those conversations. They just let me know what goes on. I tell everybody I'm just a pretty face to the operation.
What's next for that pretty face? What's next for Jason Worth when it comes to racing?
I don't know. You know, I think I see the sport through a different lens a little bit, being new and not being in it as long and coming from a different sport. You know, it's kind of a new world, but it's not in the same sense. But I see some opportunities to do some things. I think that, you know, this being a retired athlete, you know, I think people that have been in the top of sports and have big followings, I think there's a place for them in horse racing. You know, that's it gives you that outlet. Kind of that, you know, those competitive juices that used to flow every day that don't flow anymore. Kind of bring back some old emotions, some familiar emotions. I think there's ways to get, you know, more people in it and grow the sport through different, kind of different fan bases and different groups that haven't been accessed in the sport for, you know, maybe ever. But I don't know. I think there's ways to build the sport and grow it that haven't been done in you know, maybe ever. But the reality is this. I think this sport is incredible, and it feels a little untapped. You know, there's some stuff on the backside that I think there's opportunities there. You know, and I tell people, like, I'm looking at this sport through the eyes of the horse. I mean, that's the most familiar thing to me. I mean, I was a professional athlete for 22 years. These horses are professional athletes. I mean, they're absolute freaks of nature, and they can't talk, you know, so I think on some regards, they need a voice, you know, someone that can relate. And, you know, when I talk to the trainers and some of the therapists or whatever, there's the conversations are pretty interesting. You know, it's a game that's been around for a long time, and there hasn't been you know, a whole lot of changes to, you know, how they do things. So I don't know. I see some opportunities. I'm still working on exactly what those opportunities are and how they look, but I definitely have a newfound passion for the sport of horse racing and for these horses and the people around it. It's an amazing sport with amazing people, amazing creatures. And I think that more people, if more people knew kind of more about it, it would be a bigger deal. I mean, there's more to it than just the Kentucky Derby or the, you know, some of those three, four, five races that people pay attention to. And if you look across the landscape of sports now, I mean, I don't think that the other big sports are growing. I think they're going the other way. So people are looking for an outlet. You know, and with all this gambling stuff that's been going on and you know, how popular that's grown, and the generation of people that are, you know, it's like the, we're dealing with like the ADD generation, right? They can't they can't tune in for a 3-hour baseball game, but they could tune in for a 2-minute horse race. It's almost the perfect sport for the world we live in right now, you know, instant gratification. So I think there's ways to grow it. And we're going to be working on some projects, I think, coming downstream pretty soon.
Can you watch a 3-hour baseball game?
If you ever went to a game and watched me play, you would know that I can't even watch a whole inning. That's why I play the outfield. You know, I'm out there picking daisies and you know, waving at people in the stands. And it's you know, if you know how to watch baseball, it's a great sport. But you know, I get the attention span of it. But that's okay. I mean, it is what it is. That's, you know, when they did all this stuff to speed up the game, and they're trying to put all these rules in to, you know, make the game go faster and change it. I think they've lost themselves a little bit on who they are and what's the game's really about. I mean, I don't care how long the game takes. You know, if I'm playing it, I'm going to be out there the whole time anyways. If I'm a fan, if I watch it, oh, I mean, what's the difference in, you know, waking up in the morning, checking the box score of the paper that nobody does anymore? But, you know, it's like, I don't care how long the game takes to play. at the end of the season, if you make the playoffs, that's the only thing that really matters. So, I don't know. I've got my own ideas on that, but my passion for horse racing has taken over my life and my family's life, and they got the support of everybody. So we're moving on, moving forward. We'll see what we can do in this game. I love it. It's great people. And I think, like I said, I think it's an untapped world, really.
J-Dub, I appreciate you taking the time. I know you got a lot going on. You got to go find you another Triple Crown winner, I'm sure, at some point. And we'll get you back on here a little bit longer next time. But I wanted to make sure we caught up with you after Dornick won the 2024 Belmont Stakes.
For sure. I'll see you up there, maybe for the Jim Dandy, and if not for Travers. But I will say that the Belmont at Saratoga was just, you know, for somebody that's never really done any of this stuff, I thought Saratoga was an awesome place. The people around there, just the whole atmosphere, unbelievable. Can't wait to get back up there. Hopefully see you soon.
Yeah, well, let me know if you needed a reservation at Sliva. I got you. Don't worry
about it. Okay. We'll talk about that. I owe you one.
All right, man. We'll talk to you soon. I was going to get you back, Jay, for that one. So here's the thing. It's not a big deal, but Jason may or may not have asked for some help for a reservation at a little restaurant in Saratoga that I might know a few people at. And I helped him out. And what did he do? He forgot that he had the reservation, and he no-showed. No big deal. It's a busy restaurant. I'm sure they filled it in. But I told him he's forgiven. If you win the Belmont Stakes, and it was not the night of the Belmont Stakes, but if you win the Belmont Stakes, then you're allowed to no-show. The problem is, though, my brother-in-law is a huge Mets fan. So we were already kind of skating on thin ice, getting a Philly into there. By the way, if you guys didn't hear Kurt Menefee, a Philly in the Belmont. I panicked for a second. I thought he made a mistake. I thought he was saying that he thought Dornick was a Philly. And then I realized what he was actually saying. He was referring to Jason being a Philly, and he won the Belmont. Mind blown. I want to thank our friends at Qatar Racing. I want to thank Sheikh Fahad. I want to thank the team there with Qatar Racing. I want to thank Jason Worth for taking the time and tell him one more time, congratulations on winning the Belmont Stakes. I also want to thank Jason for the kind words that he said about racing. I mean, I know he is racing now as well, but anytime a athlete or someone with notoriety that I think that has a fan base where people look up to them, and whether it's, you know, I know a lot of people make fun of like the celebrities at the Breeders' Cup thing, but like when people see someone that they think is cool doing something, it makes that thing they're doing look a little bit cooler to the person who admires that person, if that all makes sense. And Jason's words about calling it the most underrated sport, and all the attention that we got through the MLB and Fox and all that stuff, it was an outstanding situation for all of us. And congratulations to Jason and Randy Hill and the rest of the team. That's it. I'm going to get out of here. We'll see you next week.
I need to know everything. Who and the what and the where. I need everything. Trust me, I hear what you're saying, but act like it's new what you're telling me. I'm curious, George. I hop in the Porsche, it's five and a horse. I'm ready for war. I'm coming for throws to turn to a ghost. I need to know everything. Now you'd be surprised at the info you get is by letting them talk, so I'm letting them talk. Gotta keep quiet, maneuver, and science.